Du lyssnar på inspelningen från arbetsmarknadsminister Ylva Johanssons tal under konferensen Welcoming Refugees, Local European Experiences, som Arena Idé arrangerade tillsammans med Norrköpings kommun och Remeso i Norrköping den 25-27 januari.
So hello everybody, I'm very pleased to be here. I understand this is a very creative and hands-on conference, and I was just meeting the press and told them that the people like you who are here and those you that you represent are those who are actually doing doing the things. We can support with the opportunities and resources, but it has to be done also, the real work has to be done on the ground, on the local level, both professionally and voluntarily on the local level. So I will, I prepared a speech, I will help part of it at least, but then I will also open up for some questions, so you can think about some questions before I have to leave back. And I would like to start with that we are living in a very challenging times. Sweden is changing, and Europe is at risk. Actually, I should say. So we are living in very challenging time, and we have huge responsibilities on our shoulders. And you probably already talked about this, but you of course know that Europe is receiving only a very, very small fraction of these people that are fleeing from war, prosecution, and oppression. It's more than 60 million people. And only a small fraction is coming to Europe, actually. But Europe has so far failed to offer a collective response to the situation. That's my opinion. In Sweden, in 2015, we experienced the largest per capita inflow of asylum seekers that had ever, ever been recorded in any OECD country. 163,000 asylum seekers. And of course, that was a situation that wasn't sustainable. And to be personal, this situation during the fall in 2015, we struggled to get more European countries to take their share of responsibility. But the impression I had was that my country was becoming an island. Other countries just disappeared. Yes, there were Germany and some others, but others just disappeared. There was a feeling that we were left not alone, but like an island. And I also personally had a feeling, I'm very much in favor of the European Union and the whole idea of working together, facing the common challenges together. And I think it's very important that we have a union based on some common values. But to be honest, that fall, I had a feeling, where are those values when you need them? That was the feeling. So the Swedish government felt that we were forced to change our regulation. We couldn't have a sustainable situation with 163,000 asylum seekers a year. So now we have a new regulation still. Last year, Sweden received almost 30,000 asylum seekers. That's more than our proportion of those who came to the European Union last year, even with this stricter regulation that has been very hard to criticize also for many actually good reasons. So I think it's important that we need to perceive the current migration situation not only as a challenge, but also as an opportunity to boost our economies and respond to an aging population. And I am proud of that Sweden, in the midst of an enormous task in providing security to people fleeing war, prosecution, and oppression, is taking great responsibility for refugees, especially children, in need of international protection. And of those who came in 2015, which is still really what we are struggling with in our country, 70,000 were children. 70,000. That means we are now going in all-time high in all school forms at the same time in Sweden. 70,000 new pupils. Half of them, 35,000, came without their parents. That means Sweden took more than one-third of all unaccompanied minors that came to the European Union in 2015. 35,000. And our system was prepared to take about 1,000. That was the case. So that was really a challenge. It's still really a challenge. And I've been meeting with many of those unaccompanied minors. I've been thinking very much what it must be like to be one of those. I'm a mother of three. My youngest child is a boy. He's 16. He's almost like those unaccompanied minors because they are boys and about 16. That's the case. And I can just imagine being a mother and having to say to my son, I can't protect you. We have to send you away. We have to gather all the resources that we can get from families and friends to send you away. That's the basic responsibility for a parent, to protect your child. Imagine being in a situation where you can't do that. And coming back to my son, his name is Anton. He's a wonderful person. But to be honest, he doesn't show that every day. He's a teenage boy. And he's very capable in many aspects, but not in all. Judgment is not his best thing. And that's part of being a teenager, isn't it? Yeah. So imagine being that mother, sending your son, teenage boy, away on a very dangerous journey. You might not even survive. And if you survive and come to another camp, I might never ever see you again. Imagine that feeling. And if I were that mother, sending my boy away, how much I had wished that he should come to a country, maybe Sweden, that somebody will see that he is such a wonderful person, even if it doesn't show that every day. So I think this is the responsibility that we have. We can't be the parents of these unaccompanied minors, of course. But we have to be instead of their parents. They are very capable, they have a lot of resources, they have a lot of energy, but still, they are minors. They are not adults. So they need some advice, they need some protections, and they need somebody to say, come on, we're going to solve this. It's going to be okay. And also somebody to say, well, you might be a football pro, but investing in an education might also be a good idea, you know. That kind of things that we do, some have to do. So this is a huge responsibility for society. And they came in 2015, and the situation now in Swedish upper secondary school is that 8% of the pupils in upper secondary level came in 2015. You can imagine that kind of challenge for teachers and schools to deal with. And of course, many of them have lost a lot of years in schools that they couldn't go to school because they were refugees. So, and many of them come from countries where very poor school systems. So that's going to be a challenge because they're not going to be able to catch up with their mates before they reach adult the age of our adult. So these are huge challenges. So I have to come back to my speech, I guess. But also to say something about the Swedish experience, we could see that Swedish people showed such an enormous empathy during the most dramatic month, and still they still do. We still have a very, very strong commitment on the local level from a lot of different kind of voluntarily engagement and civil society, but also a lot, I have to mention, all those that are very dedicated in their professional roles like teachers, social workers and all that, that really, really make a difference for these people. So, and we also have a situation where the local communities have huge responsibility for the situation, and they manage. And it's incredible how they do it, because it's not really possible to manage such a huge inflow of newcomers at the same time, and such a huge inflow of children and minors without parents. But of course, there are a lot of problems. Of course, there are a lot of challenges. But I should say, yes, they manage, and that's really great. But I must also say that I am disappointed that the European Union, not really the European Union, but the member states, have failed to reach a situation where we can have a fair distribution and share the responsibilities for refugees. I go drop some of this. So what we are facing right now in Sweden is that Sweden is growing very, very rapidly. And we talk about that at the press conference. This is a good situation. All countries, all local communities would like to grow. That's a good situation. But we are growing so fast that it almost hurts. That's what we have. So we have to build capacity. We are lacking housing enormously all over the country. We are lacking schools. We are lacking teachers. This is really the big challenges that we are facing right now. Capacity. And of course, one of the big challenges is also to help people into the labor market. I will come back to that. But I must also say that there are enormous challenges, but these are manageable. This is also important to say. We can do it. Of course, it will be some problems. Of course, not everything will be 100% perfect, but we can manage, and we will manage. That is what we are right into. And I think it's also important to take into account, and that's what really it's important, that 10 years ago, Lisa told you, 10 years ago I was Minister for Health and Elderly Care. And the overall discussion that we had was, how can we afford a welfare system? We are being older and older. Bigger and bigger proportion of the population were going to be retired. And fewer and fewer will be in working ages. How can we afford welfare? And who will actually work there? We will be lacking people in elderly care and so on. That was the overall question that we discussed. And actually, they came 2015. Yeah, people are here now, and they are young. They are young. 70% of those who came to Sweden in 2015 were under the age of 30. They are those who are going to work to pay and pay taxes so that we can afford the welfare system and pensions, and that anybody will be actually working in healthcare sector and elderly care and so on. So they are here. So this is a really good situation. We have the people. We have also the engagement from the local community. So, of course, we can handle this, but we have to help people into the right kind of education, into the right kind of job, so that they will be able to catch up, and also so that we can benefit from people, and they can benefit from working, of course, but also that whole society can benefit from people working. And we can see those who came and are in working ages, they are very different in their background. About one third have a university degree or something like a university degree, about one third. And of course, that's really a good opportunity to use that kind of education and experience right into the Swedish labor market, because we are lacking people in almost all professions. We have a strong labor market in Sweden right now. In this group, there is about 50-50 when it comes men and women in the highly educated group. And there is about one third that have an education level compulsory school and something extra. Not really upper secondary level of exam, but 9, 10, 11 years of education. In this group, there is a big majority of men. And of course, this is a group where it would be likely that some extra additional vocational training, for example, would lead to be able to work in all, some of all these professions that we are lacking people. The big problem is that we have about one third that are actually lacking school background with only a few years or sometimes not even that. And they are mainly women. Two groups, say. Some of them came as teenagers, haven't had the time to catch up because they were, and that would not so be so big problem. But some of them are women coming from countries where they haven't got the opportunity to go to school because they were born girls. Yeah. Of course, and they have never ever worked paid work. Of course they have been working, but they never ever get paid. So they are very far away from the kind of competence that is normally needed to enter the Swedish labor market. And this is really a big challenge that we have to face, and that we both need, of course, to invest heavily in adult education, but also what we are into right now, to actually produce new jobs that we the state will pay for, so that they can also have a paid job. Because we know that it's a real connection between when parents go to work, the children's results in school will be much better. So when mother goes to work, something will happen in the family. And also something would happen with her ability to be a good mother. And to come back to those teenagers, but I experience every day at home, they are not so eager to listen to, at least my son, is not so eager to listen to his mother. But it's important that he does, of course. So this is also important with a mother and a father that goes to work and earn their own money, also with the ability to give some good advices and for their children. So this is really important. One important thing that we do in Sweden when it comes to helping people into the labor market is that we cooperate with the social partners. We have a long tradition of strong and independent social partners. And yesterday, for example, I visited one of the unions that organize lawyers and economists. And they have now for 7 years a mentor program. When an already established person, or usually one with a Swedish background, is a mentor, welcoming a person, a newcomer with an academic degree in these areas, to be the adept, and they work together for 9 months, and it's really a successful program. So these kind of unions welcoming their new colleagues, this has been very, very fruitful, and I think quite unusual when I look around in other countries. And I also invited the social partners to help me to welcome new people into the labor market. So we are now together with the employers' organization and the unions for different professions. We have formed fast tracks. So for example, for teachers, there is a fast track for teachers that the or employers and unions are responsible for. Together, of course, with the Public Employment Service and universities for some additional training and so on, and examination. We have this kind of fast tracks both for blue-collar workers and for white-collar workers. And I think it's too early to say it's a success, but I think in 1 year or two I'm going to be able to say it's a success. So it's been very... it's a very good experience how the social partners cooperate to welcome new people into their profession. And to just give one personal example of this, I think it's so important that we focus, and the labor market, that we focus on the profession. My own profession is I'm a teacher in math. That's what I'm good at, actually. I know how to teach teenagers in math. I'm really good at that. If I were a newcomer in another country, this is what I would like to rely on. because I know something about this, and it's not so different how people learn algebra or whatever in math. Of course, there are some other differences in school system and culture and all that, but that's something I can, a good base to be on where I'm safe. So I think it's very important that we use that kind of safe heaven or stepstone that the profession is, and then going into society. And I had a meeting when I was in opposition, a terrible time in opposition. I hate it. But I was in opposition, and I had a meeting with, having contact with a group of women from Somalia in an area outside Stockholm called Husby. And we had some discussions on a lot of things. And one day, one of the women told me, she said, "This is a strange thing, Ylva. I was born in Uppsala, which is a university town. And when I lived in Uppsala, I was a lawyer. But when I came to Husby, which is a more deprived suburb, I became a woman from Somalia. And then I decided, if I've ever been able to be Minister for Employment, yes, I am, I will always, always, always focus on the profession. You will have your ethnic identity or whatever identity you would like to have, but in the labor market, the profession is what counts. So this is also important with the fast track, where we actually use the profession to as the most important thing. So I promised you some questions, so I have to end now. But I would like to say that I think that we need to embrace that Sweden is changing. And we also need to embrace that it changed what it means to be Swedish. And this is an ongoing process. But we also always must fight inequalities and gender gaps. Sweden must be a country where I would like it to be, a country with strong cohesion and a low level of inequality, and equal rights and equal equality between men and women. And I think that we, as I started, we are living in very challenging times, and we are the generation who has to deal with it. We can't say it's going to be handled next year or the year after. We have to handle it right now, and we are the ones who have to do it on all levels. So now it's time for leadership. In all civil organizations, in all schools, in all local communities, in governments, on a European level. Now it's time for leadership. Because we need to succeed. Because failure is not an option. We need to succeed. And we will succeed. Because we can manage this. Thank you.
Thank you so much.